Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 2nd, 2005. Today's session is entitled Writing Out of Reverence for the Earth, presented by Jan Bowman and Karen Herseth Wee. Session number BOJ 2005-04. Let's listen in.
I'm Karen Herseth Wee, and I'm here because Jan is, and love always to be in the company of people who like writing and to be in conversation about it.
And I'm Jan Bowman, and I'm here to learn from you about paying attention. One of the ways that I've learned to pay attention a little better than I did before is through meditation, and the basis of meditation is breathing, deep breathing, and we've done that each day. Well, let's, if you want, take off your shoes. We recommend it. And you can see who the veteran of the class is.
Yes.
We've been writing barefoot poetry, and so we thought it'd be a good idea to take our shoes off. And then we've been starting with getting centered through a yoga pose, a yoga stretch, which is called Salute the Sun. And we're going to read a Mary Oliver poem today. Is it just called
Maybe
the Sun?
Two of them.
We're going to read two, but there's one that's, oh, the Summer Day. Two of her poems there. But anyway, so when we lift our arms to the sky, we breathe in. And then exhale as we lower them. And we're going to breathe from, this is such an important center, and I almost hate to put my hands over it because of this residual, this beautiful reminder. My new book of poetry has a couple of poems about the belly in it, and I'm thinking of writing a whole book of belly poems. But one of them is called A Praise of My Belly. So this is the center of our breath. There's the right way. Look at it.
It's loaded. Yeah. I feel like I just walked onto a basketball court with cleats.
You did intend to pass that around, didn't you?
I brought a shape, so.
Go right ahead.
I already did.
Okay. All right, so. Salute the sun. Oh. Good. Breathing and paying attention do go together for many reasons, but you can feel that as your chest opens and your lungs expand, your head tends to clear a bit too. And that, of course, is the way that we can pay attention and receive the world. I also think there's a connection between that kind of breathing and creativity. Because when we breathe from our upper chest, you know, the shallow breathing, we're apt to have tighter thoughts, if you know what I mean. Not such open or freely associative thoughts.
This is a repeat for a couple of you who've been there, but there's another poem on the sheet that I thought, this is to be encouraging about being a writer or being a poet. And it's not to be discouraging. It's to help us realize that writers, poets, artists, we come in all kinds of motions in our life. We're on all kinds of journeys, and there's hecticness and there's quiet, and probably the main intentionality about writing or doing creative is trying to find the space to do it, to where you can be centered enough. And we've read a couple times the first one. Let's have someone who would offer to read the second one, the Polish poem on Who is a Poet. Would someone offer to read that?
A
poet is one who writes verses and one who does not write verses. A poet is one who throws off fetters and one who puts fetters on himself. A poet is one who believes and one who cannot bring himself to believe. A poet is one who has told lies and one who has been told lies. One who has been inclined to fall and one who raises himself. A poet is one who tries to leave and one who cannot leave. What's fetters?
Things that bind you. Oh, ties. Okay. If you are fettered, you're tied down. Mm-hmm. What first comes to mind, having read or heard that? A poet is one who writes verses and one who does not write verses. A poet is one who throws out fetters and one who puts fetters on himself.
Both are true.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a list of opposites, isn't it?
Yes, a list of opposites.
A list of opposites. For me, that just says it's wide open. Mm-hmm. For me, I think it just means a poet is one who comes to the page and picks up a pen and writes. That's the main thing. And the other one could read. We could read it just to remind ourselves of making a place like we are today. I mean, this poem is what we're doing today, coming together to be together. Would anyone else like to read that?
How to be a poet? To remind myself, make a place to sit down. Sit down. Be quiet. You must depend upon affection, reading, knowledge, skill, more of each than you have, inspiration, work, growing older, patience, for patience joins time to eternity. Any readers who like your work doubt their judgment. Breathe with unconditional breath, the unconditioned air. Shun electric wire. Communicate slowly. Live a three-dimensional life. Stay away from screens. Stay away from anything that obscures the place it is in. There are no unsacred places. There are only sacred places. And this desecrated, I was going to say desecrated places.
Mm-hmm. There are only sacred places and desecrated places.
Do you know when Wendell wrote this?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Post computers, I think.
He's always had a terrible relationship with computers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you please introduce yourself?
I'm Scott Slava. With Linda, obviously, the ice cream deliverer.
Yeah, right. Well, we don't need to spend much time. These are gifts to you to just keep with yourself and enjoy and read and remind. They are lists. You know, that's another thing when you come to the page. Sometimes when you have this idea that's mulling around, just to make a list of where it takes you results in the piece itself.
And read these often. And this is the first that we've read it three times this week, and it's the first time that it struck me that unconditioned air reverberates with unconditional air and with un-air-conditioned air. I don't know if that.
I think you probably need an air-conditioned air, along with all the other ideas we bring to it. Mm-hmm. A few months ago, but I laugh when I come to the stay away from screens, because I just spent time with my college roommates, and we were up at our cabin, and we were visiting through an incredible rain, thunder, lightning storm. And I had just gotten up from the table and gone to the sink, and it was like the lightning hit in the sink. I mean, it was so close to us, and it cracked. And my Norwegian roommate, before the crack was over, she had leapt from the table and was in the middle of the room. And then we started to laugh because, you know, it had just shocked us. And she said, "Well, I was always told to stay away from screens in a thunderstorm."
Yeah.
And so she was getting away from the window with screens on. And so I come to this and I see Lisbeth going across our room really fast.
That's a great image. The image I had was, I remember reading Wendell Berry talking about, you know, computers in particular. And I think that's how I read it.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to, a few years ago, type everything still on typewriters. Mm-hmm. He said, anytime you're connected to the power company, you're not free. That was his kind of view of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so he tried to disconnect himself whenever possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can never do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can certainly get inspiration from it and sort of struggle against it.
And maybe internally not be fettered by it.
True.
Well, yesterday we had a wonderful discussion of some of Mary Oliver's poems, and we're going to continue to look at a couple of her poems today, different ones. So we'll start with The Summer Day, and again we'd like to ask if anyone would volunteer to read this.
I'll do it first.
All right.
I think I can do it without classes. The Summer Day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass. The one who is eating sugar out of my hand. Who's moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention. How to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
Thank you for the reading. As Karen said, we had distributed, it's really a paragraph, which is very poetic, by Robert Bly.
It's
about observing a caterpillar as he sits with his cup of coffee early in the morning.
Robert Bly.
That's where my mind went to.
Yeah, it's a circus.
Miss Modifier. It's like a praying
caterpillar.
Well, we sent Kristen and Naomi and Val out with an assignment to do a similar thing. So after we talk about this a little bit, we're going to ask if anything happened. So
there's a little bit of connection that I'm sure you've noticed between that description, very close description, metaphoric description of a caterpillar by Robert Bly, and Oliver's poetic description of the grasshopper. And anyone who, I'm sorry we didn't bring the Bly, but I mean it's for anyone to say, what is the singular quality, would you say, of paying attention in this poem? I mean, she even uses the phrase paying attention, doesn't she? What type of paying attention is this?
There's a sensitive sort of observation, the level of detail.
Mm-hmm.
The jaw's going sideways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a wonderful moment, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can do that, and the big eyes moving around. There's this sense of loving attention to detail.
Mm-hmm.
almost reminds you of Annie Dillard, doesn't it?
It does, yes, exactly.
Were there any surprises? That is, does she pay attention to this grasshopper in surprising ways?
I kept wondering a little bit why she moved to prayer there in the middle after observing the grasshopper. And I do know enough about Mary Oliver to know how aware and how much she cares about the sacrament that I think the earth is for her. But it just struck me that the grasshopper would also have its front feet together, wouldn't it? Where she's describing
about,
that. Yeah, the forearms together. Mm-hmm. And I'll bet it's the grasshopper looking like it's praying that sent her there.
That's an interesting thought, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Because she follows that, I don't know what prayer is, and then she says, I do know how to pay attention, and by that point, we believe her in the poem. I mean, I believe her in the poem. Mm-hmm. I do know how to pay attention, you know.
And then she says how to fall down into the grass and how to kneel in the grass and how to be idle and blessed.
Mm-hmm. She likes grass, doesn't she? Remember the peony poem where she's got the ants under the grass?
Yeah. We wrote about the terror, that line in which she uses the terror underneath the grass. Yeah.
Do you adore the green grass with its terror beneath?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And to be blessed, isn't that nice? I mean, I know how to be idle and be blessed. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a sort of the essence of grace. I just got done with a long hike, and I was meditating so much on that idea. Mm-hmm. Because I read this quote where the essence of it was, don't think about what you can do for God. Think about what God is doing for you. Mm-hmm. And so the whole time I was thinking about what is God doing for me. It was a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. That's what being blessed is, I think. Mm-hmm. Grace there.
Mm-hmm. I think somebody has said it already, but I think she might be saying, or I'm feeling that paying attention is a form of prayer, or when you pay attention, you are blessed, as in prayer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Surprises me a bit that she says, following how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down into the grass, how to be idle and blessed. You know, I was taught that prayer is a kind of work, right? Well, everything was work, right? A good old work ethic. And you pray. There were even certain letters we were supposed to follow, you know, adoration, praise, or whatever. And this is idle prayer. I mean, that would not really have been something that was emphasized in my view. But it isn't idle prayer. I use that incorrectly. How to be idle and blessed. What does that say to you?
When I teach people how to draw, they have to pay attention. And the only way to pay attention is to hold still. Mm-hmm. And you have to still your mind and do a meditation, really. You have to draw what you see. And you can only do that if the rest of your brain is idle. So I've been thinking a lot about this today, how putting the words. But it seems, I mean, idle contrasted to work, what other people think work is. We were talking about that earlier. Naomi works really hard to get the weaving set up ready so that people can come in and be idle with their weaving. You have to be what other people consider idle to pay close attention to a grasshopper. Mm-hmm. And it's by doing that she feels that she's praying.
And it just has so much to do with emptying, just really being present and aware, which is so hard for us in this culture. But to just be empty and listen and take in exactly what's immediately in your presence.
Yes. What's so interesting to me about this poem is just on the boat on the way here, someone had handed me this book with a farm around a sketch of that he had just written. And from the very first chapter, I'm totally captured because he talks about falling down the ground with a couple of students he's trying to teach and then just making them just observe the insects, you know, and really look. And he knows the names of all the insects. And it's such, and he talks about a worm coming out like a whale reaching, you know. He has these fabulous observations. I think this is a man who for many, many years is clearly paying attention to every aspect of his lane with his smile. Amazing writing.
It's not quite the same world as the one society we live in Southern California, where there's increasing congestion and road rage and all that sort of thing. You know, paying attention means something else there, avoiding an accident. So simply must get out where you can pay attention in this other, more blessed way and be receptive to what is around.
She includes strolling in that, strolling as opposed to the striving.
And I think for me, it's a faith issue too, because I was thinking on a hike that it was a fairly strenuous hike, much of it, and yet I felt, I didn't think of the word idle, but I felt like there was a place to be idle there. Mm-hmm. Even in the midst when we were sweating it out, we were still, there was a place where that sense of being receptive, you know, being open. What is happening here? At one point we're on the steep part, and I look down, and there's an eagle feather. My gosh. I felt blessed. I felt like God had just, dropped me this wonderful gift. And it was that sense of, and here I was, the sweat was pouring down. I reached down and picked it up and carried it the rest of the way up. It was great. But that sense of being not pushing it, even though you're physically moving and exerting, but not pushing, just being open to what's happening. I like that.
Well, we're going to immerse you in Mary Oliver today. Another one. Jan gave me just this spring for my birthday. And it's been really wonderful to page my way through it. My mother loved irises, and some of the irises that you see in the spring here at Holden, Mom packed in her suitcase because she carried iris tubers like Johnny Appleseed carried seeds.
Oh, really?
The white one with the blue edge and the brown coppery one that used to be by the she brought those. And I have the names. I've been asked the names, but I didn't bring them with me, but I happened to do that. Anyway, would someone read this poem? I don't know. We are just reading right now and talking about Mary Oliver and her writing, and this is one of them.
Just lying on the grass at Blackwater. I think sometimes of the possible glamour of death, that it might be wonderful to be lost and happy inside the green grass, or to be the green grass, or maybe the pink rose, or the blue iris, or the affable daisy, or the twirled vine looping its way skyward, that it might be perfectly peaceful to be the shining lake, or the hurrying athletic river, or the dark shoulders of the trees, where the thrush each evening weeps himself into an ecstasy. I lie down in the fields of goldenrod, and everlasting. Who could find me? My thoughts simplify. I have not done 1,000 things, or 100 things, but perhaps a few. As for wondering about answers that are not available except in books, through all my childhood I was sent there to find them. I have learned to leave all that behind as in summer I take off my shoes and my socks, my jacket, my hat, and go on happier through the fields. The little sparrow with the pink beak calls out over and over, so simply, not to me, but to the whole world. All afternoon I grow wiser, listening to him, soft, small, nameless fellow at the top of some weed, enjoying his life. If you can sing, do it. If not, even silence can feel to the world like happiness, like praise from the pool of shade you have found beneath the everlasting.
Can't you picture her there? Her title says exactly what she's doing. And then she's just letting her mind wander, I think, and kind of following it. But then, unlike most of us, she's also writing it down. Most of us might lie on the grass and we might have these thoughts, but we might not follow that little chain of ideas to get it onto paper. What is most striking to you here, or interesting to you, or what did you resonate with in this poem?
I think the thing about leaving books behind, it'd be powerful. I do bury myself in books still so much of the time, and I think I miss a lot. So that was a nice message for me.
Yeah, that would be an idea that in some places people would argue with her about, or with us about, you know, maybe leaving the books behind is not a good idea, even for reflection.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's that mind-body split. I think that when we start living so much in our heads, which I definitely tend to do, and separate myself so much from my body, which is with the body in the senses that this poet is feeling all this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's coming from her head, this is coming from the body and the senses. So I think for me, who has lived so much in my mind and my head, it's really been a meditation for me in recent years of just how important it is to integrate them. So I struggle with it all the time, but I get it. I know it's important.
I love that image of her laying down in the fields of goldenrod and everlasting, and who can find her? She's. It reminds me of doing that myself in the tall grass.
Yeah.
Just laying down in all this grass over you, and then there's the shade, the pool of shade you found from the everlasting. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love you. You know, the dishes are done, you don't have to help mom anymore with that, and you go out up the hill and there's the tall grass and you lay down in it next to the cow pie.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Something of Whitman in the first stanza. Lost and happy inside the green grass, or to be the green grass. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the pink rose.
Mm-hmm. I haven't thought of that, of Whitman, but that's definitely
mm-hmm.
true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's that grass mysticism that she's got going on.
Well, our first writing prompt, we want to give you some choices. Karen, do you want to talk about those?
We did want, in the joyfulness of getting this good writing and then reading and talking about it and loving that, we still wanted to take a couple of opportunities in the hour and a half to send you to the page. And so our ideas today, you could have three choices. we have often started with a line of poetry from somebody else, and then just have you take off into your own life from that line, from into the details of your own experience, and then quit paying attention. We've got a couple of the lines, and they are Mary Oliver's on there. Or you can choose a rock from the center of the room and just look at it, think about it, hold it, wonder about it, and write about the rock. Again, coming back to this idea of reverence for the earth, and we wanted to bring a little bit of the earth right into this fake carpet here.
Do you want us to? Do you want us to take off and use that line, or as a starting point, or just as an inspiration?
You can do either. It's up to you. But I, for myself personally, I often find it easier to start from somebody's and then go. But we chose from The Summer Day and from Lying on the Grass at Blackwater these two places. If there's a line elsewhere that you would rather write from, please feel free to choose it. But we thought it might be great to start with, I don't know exactly what a prayer is, I do know how, and then go into what it is you do know how, if that rings true for you. And then secondarily, there's a little bit in that sentence, that's why the three dots. I have not done 1,000 things or 100 things, but perhaps a few. And here you could begin to list the few in terms of the reverence for the earth or the busyness of the world. You know, it's a place where you can kind of make your own list of that. Or choose the rock. And we'll take about, 6 or 8 minutes. I'll watch my clock and stop you. And in the Natalie Goldberg idea of writing, I recommend trying to put your pen on paper. Don't think too much. Don't edit yourself. Don't worry about punctuation. And just keep writing. Follow the comeliness of your mind. She always talked, and if you'd like to move to a table because you want a table underneath, do that. There are pens and pencils behind there where Jerry's got his, he's got his hat and his notebook on the other, the community pens and paper. And just choose and see where it goes. Maybe you have some ideas that you'll want to pursue further, and maybe you don't. These things work sometimes, they don't work sometimes, and all of that is okay. Does anyone have anything that happened that you'd like to read? It's always inspirational to hear.
Where did you get this rock? This is a wonderful.
That was a gift, actually, and it's a fossil.
Isn't that something?
Cool.
Yeah.
What did it tell you?
I love this beautiful rock. It's two seashells. I saw it. It's two shells in a rock. It reminds me of the time when we had a condo in Hawaii. Les was alive then. And we had so much fun. It makes me feel lonely for him and our life there. Wow, that was 25 years ago. I remember watching the sun rise and set from the deck. I remember walking in the ocean outside the condo, reaching down for shells. Heavenly Father, you have been with me in so many places, and now you are here with me at Holden. Thank you for Holden. It's a marvelous place. I feel so welcome and at home here. I feel your presence, God, here. Open up doors for me here or wherever you think I should be. Help me be open to your will. This rock is so solid. The shells were fragile, but they are cemented together into a strong rock. I am fragile too, but you can keep me strong, and I feel your presence today in class and in Holden. Thank you for sending me here again, and help me to follow your guidelines and keep me close touch with you. Holden is such a friendly place. How many hugs are given here?
I love how the trigger of that just, and then you followed so well, Natalie Goldberg calls it, the shapeliness of one's mind.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes out pulling these things together in a really beautiful, beautiful
I'm getting
piece.
Ready to leave Holden in a couple of days, and I just thought, oh, this is such a wonderful place, and I have a wonderful daughter that I'm going to go visit, and I'm excited about going to see her. I mean, I'm not, you know. But Holden is a special, special place. I mean, it's just, I've been here, you know, we'll be 3 weeks, and I don't need to talk so much about myself here, but it is a special, special place. I mean,
that's great.
I hear the fullness of your experience and mm-hmm. what you wrote. Mm-hmm. Thank you again. Would anyone else like to read?
I'll read this. This is just a fresh sort of some thoughts. I have spent these past 8 days with my 14-year-old son, playing, walking, arguing, sweating it out on a dusty hillside, on dusty hillsides high in the mountains, counting the ways that God can create a life, following an increasingly visible trail up to the high country. In this time, as fall approaches, and I am in the early autumn of my life. Today my heart is singing like the sound of that wind sweeping down Agnes Creek Gorge, and I am breathless at times, yes, breathless, at the way my life is unfolding, opening, blossoming, not unlike the purple mountain crocuses that at this very moment open for me to admire and add my blessing. I am filled with that image of being up in the country with my boy. At one point, I turned to this friend and I said, isn't this amazing? Two of us with 14-year-old boys, good boys, you know, mm-hmm. at this time when they're at risk, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of teenagers are just mm-hmm. off. And here they are, sweating it out with us mm-hmm. in the high country. Mm-hmm.
What a treasure.
Good attention to the detail of it, too. Anyone else?
It is not round or sharp. The smooth darkness of its body contrasts with the raised white web that crosses my stone. My fingers fit around it. The stone was made for my fingers. Four stripes. Like my four fingers. The stone's fingers are webbed like a frog's, though, shaped a bit like a flipper, too. Would my stone be better suited for skipping or swimming, I wonder?
Mm-hmm. Hold your stone up. Mm-hmm. Also, it has that perfect skipping.
Mm-hmm. What happens to your piece if you intersperse the word my heart where you say my stone?
Mm-hmm.
Try it and see what happens. I just heard a line there, but just see what happens.
It is not round or sharp. The smooth darkness of its body contrasts with the raised white web that crosses my heart. My fingers fit around it. My heart was made for my fingers. Four stripes, like my four fingers. The heart's fingers are webbed like a frog's, shaped a bit like a flipper too. Would my heart be better suited for skipping or swimming, I wonder? Feels like a Mad Lib.
Skipping or swimming.
Skipping or swimming. Well, if we're going to get one more writing moment, then we probably better turn to it.
Okay.
Jan and I, at this point, we thought we would try to... You've gotten ahead of us here, because one of the other ideas we have is to try to get you to write about a kind of experience with family that you may do over and over again, like if you hike a lot, or in our case, we have a summer cabin, and we have a little boat trip, and we always make this trip, and I'll read you a little bit about that in a minute. And Jan has a kind of similar thing, only it's an indoor versus the outdoor kind of experience. And we would like to turn attention to that. I can give you a copy of this one. We have a son who now has two children, and we just made this trip down a little river near our lake cabin. And I wanted to write him a letter saying how much I had enjoyed it. I went to the computer and saw that I had this letter poem from 3 years earlier, and it was exactly the same as what we had done. I didn't have to write a new one. It was all the detail was the same. But I sent it to my daughter, and she said, "Well, Mom, it's like a little memoir, you know, like a little piece of family history that you end up by repetition that becomes more dear." And so, So I will read this one, and then Jan, you can introduce your piece and read it, and then we'll send you to the paper again and see what happens. This is for Jonathan, and you can see that I've crossed out. I went back and discovered I had done this in 02. But we just did this a few weeks ago. We're home. The message you left a couple of days ago on my cell phone about our imminent 3 days at the lake, already old. The much anticipated time together, over. Hot, humid days intervened. Today, goodbye again. Our shared boat ride of a few days ago on the familiar river channel lasted scarce an hour. But to me, 40 years ago, your dad and I, newly married, rode the same river, same kind of homely metal boat. We ended up in Little Bucket too, the small lake where we scared turtles off the same log that we did today. We chug the channel, first with and then against the current. Your son trails his young fingers in the water, watching darting minnow schools, skating bugs, and maybe, please, another turtle. Then as now, a blue heron rose from the reeds, a puff of blue-gray incense smoke, ancient ancestry outlining its beak, awkward body settling into gracefulness, wide wings ferry it out of the narrows toward the open bay. So recently I was here before, thin in a skimpy black swimsuit, trailing my fingers alongside the boat, hoping to look worldly to my too young husband. I dangled a cigarette in my other hand. Your dad guided our homely tin boat gently then as now, none of us thinking for a minute how fragile, how at the whim of fate things streak toward us. We are but vapor, yet surely we are the stars themselves, eluding black holes, making a difference, trailing our blazing comet tails. Later we climb from the boat, line up our safety gear on the dock, carry it up to the screen porch. We'll make the channel trip again next year, search out the certainties, turtles, minnows, the great blue heron, yellow lilies on lily pads, black and neon blue dragonflies. Assume it'll end like today, in pleasant weather, boat skimming calm water, carrying us home. Faithful in its purpose. Tired and sunburned, we reach the cabin and lay the table for supper.
That's
I didn't make copies of this poem. There are copies in the bookstore. And this poem is set in a different season entirely, and indoors rather than outdoors. Wrap this. Now the Christmas guests are gone. At the table where they sat, a smudge of sauce, crumbs of bread. Out the window, branches of natal plum, the drip, drip of rain on shiny oval leaves, treacherous thorns. A single pure white bloom, five-petaled star, birth from blood. A college choir from long ago sings, all is calm, all is bright. The tiny tree lights, red, gold, and green, curtain window panes, and in the air where all is bare, the lights take flight, string leafless limbs, gray, misty night. Wrap this. So you can start with a smudge of gravy on the table, or a few crumbs, and look around the room and what else is there. And you know how lights reflect in a window pane, and it looked as if they were hanging from the trees outside as well, too. And the misty night helped. I think that it's a little bit difficult to ask you to do this because the detail that you want is far away in time and space. So we'll give you a choice here too. If you want to start with something in this room, you know, just an ordinary object, and let it take you somewhere else, that would be fine too. Or if you have a pretty vivid recall, like my husband Gary does, you could go back to that place. He gave a homily once in which he said, the kingdom of heaven is like my grandmother's kitchen. You know, oh. It just evoked all the bread baking smells.
So if in kind of hearing the poems and being here together, it could take you to some moment in your own life that gets repeated, you know, or maybe writing a letter. I mean, my piece resulted in writing a letter to Jonathan about what we had done, and I wanted to kind of capture it. And if any of you have any of those kinds of things that have to do with family or the past or the traditions of holiday, like Jan has pulled it into, that kind of thing. But it's a little bit open-ended for you, so see how that works. And you might need those minutes to just think about it and what you would like to turn your attention to. Okay, that may not be nearly long enough, and if it isn't, I would encourage you to, if you like what you're doing, to follow it further or redo it or skimpy it down. One of the things I discover for myself when I do these kind of free writes, but I'm trying to get my imagination perking a little bit, is that things are wordy and they get improved if I can figure out how to pare them down. distill them, put them on a page differently, read them to a friend or to David, and they change. But sometimes what happens in the moment is exactly the way you want it to be, and that's kind of exciting too. Did anyone have any success with this that you would share with us? I have to say personally, it's always a surprise about where you go. For me it was this time. I had no idea I'd write about what I started to write about.
Well, when Karen says, did you have any success, then it means, did you get more than two or three words?
I had a hard time writing about family. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to write about family, so I didn't.
There are some subjects that I think we all have that we don't have to write about them, mm-hmm. But sometimes if we get ourselves in a back door or some kind of oblique entrance, to the experience. It's not really advice because I have trouble with a lot of subjects.
Yeah, sometimes I've got so many emotions packed into the idea of family, both positive and negative, mm-hmm. that it's like opening a can of worms. So I went the opposite way, so I guess I'll read that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really anything, but words, so many words, people have so many words to write, so many things to say. What about all the sounds that need repeating? What about the sight of silver leaves shimmering in the spring wind? What about the deep peace of darkness? What about the quiet, with no words, with no thought? What about just listening?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
Lovely. I think you could use that sometime at a Vespers. Mm-hmm. Some moment where it would really speak to many of us. Mm-hmm.
It's really what I wrote about for the first one, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. I wrote about silence Silence. Or a wordless prayer, let's say.
Anyone else just have anything that feels?
I think Jerry has something. You want to read something there?
Well, it's really marking a season. Sitting across from Jan, being open to moments in this place we've known. Together since we married 43 years ago, climbs to Cloudy Pass, Copper Basin, alone in electrical storm in the pass, reaching Image Lake, an overlay of chalets, morning walks, dish teams, now again we've come. And for the first time, I doubt I can make Hard Lake. I take Jan's arm to steady myself, making it up to Chalet 10 in the dark so rich, so challenging, so much uncertainty.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, mm-hmm. Wonderful. You've got then, you've got now, you've got ritual, relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you've got Mary Oliver, I think, and her mysterious dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Well, I can take you back a little bit to my cowboy past.
Each fall from my room at the top floor of the farmhouse, I knew it was soon market time from the crying in the feedlots of the calves. Amid the sweat and the leather, the horse and the rider, they had separated the cows from the calves, though they could still see each other through the strong fences. And from my room, I would hear the bawling begin and build, and it would crescendo into the second day, and by the third, a small, indiscernible quieting. Upstairs in my room at night, looking into the night toward the Black Angus, my heart was anxious for them. I was in their place, thinking, how could I stand it if someone had taken me away from Mom, but I could see her through the slats of some barrier and could hear her call to me, and I would cry too and be naive and young. And I had to learn that after the bawling calves quieted, the long trucks would come and take them away. Sometimes today in my grown-up life, on a freeway behind a semi filled with calves, my heart goes back to that ranch, that room, that west window from which I watched with my worried heart even then.
Mm-hmm. Where did you grow up?
On a ranch in northeast South Dakota.
That's right. Because I was from the Midwest. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very mm-hmm. fun. Mm-hmm.
But I had no idea I was going to go back there.
Right.
That's the kind of wonderful surprise about being in company, in community. Mm-hmm. One of the things mm-hmm. we have had on our descriptions of these writing sessions is what it means to write or do these things in community, mm-hmm. to do them with each other, and the gift of that.
I have one real quick one.
Great.
Have any of you, reading this, visited the land of a teenage boy? It's all about I love you, despite what they say. Is this heaven, I say, as we approach Cloudy Pass with its maroons and greens and lime lichen and silver boulders wind streaming off our faces? No, this is Cloudy Pass, he says. Moments later, flushed with intense anger because I ate the last cracker. I look at him and smile. He looks away, still enraged. 30 minutes of silence later, he says, "Sorry, Dad. I thought that was my cracker, that's all." I do not ask him why he thought that was his cracker. I do not lecture him in the ways of sharing and the sins of pettiness. I do not return his apology with silence, not today at least. Instead, I smile and say, "It's okay." I pat him on the cheek and say again, "I love you." He smiles, looks down, then up at the sky. The land of the teenage boy is, after all, about I love you.
Oh, I like that. Linda, I think there would be a song in there somewhere. There's some nice repetition and some beautiful interior.
That actually happened, right?
You gave us the assignment to write something in detail.
Uh-huh. Yes.
Well, I wasn't intending to do this, but I was sitting on my swing and something happened. And so I quickly got this. Mm-hmm. But I usually would have started drawing. I wrote instead. That was very mm-hmm. fun. So here's what it was. One half of a bee wiggles and squirms. A lifetime away, but only an inch, the head, antler curved, still as its shadow on the bench, yellow paint peeling. Yellow and black stripes on a tear-shaped body, writhing, pointed end rising and falling, contracting as in birth, a rhythmic pang, sharp stinger extended. Where the thorax begins, none but a hole, white where it should be, no legs to help. The culprit, black half-sized beetle, scuttles off shrimp-like, bright orange rings flashing warning. Now it's finished, hornet attacks, sticking mandibles into the only softness, white hole.
you will move no more. Your innards now within the masked one, the larger conquering one, the thief. How brittle its wings, antlers, feet. How much a warrior curling in on its prey, still head only inches away, upside down, triangular mandibles yellow, one curled antler. Only the sun moves its shadow.